Two plans are being fulfilled during the Passion: God's plan for our salvation and the plans of evil men who are plotting to kill Jesus. How could this be God's plan? How could it come to this? Well, Jesus is God and he knows everything. And three times in his lengthy and lonesome road to Calvary, he predicted to the apostles what was going to happen to him in Jerusalem when he got there for the Passover. They were going to betray him. Others were going to convict him of crimes he was not guilty of, and that he was going to be cruelly murdered as a traitor against the Roman Empire. But more than Jesus simply announcing the crucifixion just before he went up to the cross, God had announced what was going to happen on Good Friday 1,000 years before it came to pass. Jesus on the cross, the last time he speaks in Mark's gospel, he quotes the Psalms. We heard it sung today, Psalm 22, when he said, my God, why have you forsaken me? At first glance, it may appear to some that Jesus was giving in to despair because of what was happening to him. But we have to consider that whole psalm in its context. What did they sing? They have pierced my hands and my feet, for my clothing they cast lots. That made absolutely no sense when King David wrote those words. But looking back through the lens of history, God, a millennium before Good Friday, was already telling us exactly what was going to happen on the mountain of Calvary when his son had his hands and feet pierced. And certainly they did cast lots for the only thing he had left, his robe. Yes, this was God's plan being fulfilled. But the Sanhedrin, they thought they were winning. They were plotting together with the chief priests, the scribes, the elders, the scholars of the law, the Romans, the Herodians. All of these men who hate each other hated Jesus more because all of them saw him as a threat to their power and authority. And so they wanted to murder him in order to try to silence the movement they believed he represented, that they feared was just going to cause an uprising against the Roman Empire. They think their plan is being fulfilled. God knows his plan is being fulfilled. And God writes straight with crooked lines. He can use even the evil plots of evil men. He can use evil, if needed, to bring about good. He doesn't cause it, and he is not the author of it. But as we see throughout human history, God is the only one capable of bringing good things from bad, light from darkness, and as we shall soon see a week from today, life from death. This is God answering Israel's greatest prayer, keeping his greatest promise that he would send his son to save us, and at great cost, the cost of his life, his own flesh and blood, for sinners like me and people like you, and for our salvation. The reason why the church gives us Lent and Holy Week each year is because all too often we might find ourselves taking this great gift that we can't earn and do not deserve and cannot afford. We take it for granted. It's in one ear and it's out the other because we've heard it all before and we know how the story ends. But this one week, just one out of 52, we're called to keep watch, so that perhaps that lonesome road to Calvary won't be so lonesome as others abandon him. Perhaps we will remain by his side. Perhaps we will keep our eyes fixed on Jesus. Perhaps we can deny ourselves and take up our crosses and follow him. And even if this has been a lousy Lent for you, where promises were made and perhaps we failed to keep them, well, now we get another chance to stand at Jesus' side so that we can see just how much God loves us and at what great cost he was willing to send his son to break the chains of sin, Satan, and death forever and for everyone. So if we had to figure out what role we're going to play in the Passion, for most of the year, it's Peter. Peter said, Jesus, I won't deny you, and then does it anyway. Peter, who said, I don't know who that is. I don't know who you're talking about. That's what we do when we sin. We pretend that we do not know that Jesus is God or that he can't see what it is that we've chosen to do. We find ourselves like Peter when Jesus was sweating tears of blood, the most intense moment of his life in the flesh on earth. Three times he tried to wake Peter up. He just could have cared less. This week, perhaps, we would best be cast in the role of Barabbas. Mark in the gospel tells us Barabbas was actually guilty of the crimes that Jesus was about to die for. The Sanhedrin claimed that Jesus was going to start an insurrection. Barabbas was arrested because he actually did participate in one. Barabbas was a murderer who had killed people trying to throw off Roman oppression. Jesus didn't take life. He gives it. He had raised three people from the dead before he himself was going to die on that cross. Pontius Pilate released one prisoner each year during the Passover as a gesture of goodwill to these oppressed people that Rome taxed so heavily and deprived of freedom in every way. And when given the choice, people chose the murderer, the one who takes life, over the one who gives it. Jesus, who is God, knew it would be that way. It wasn't a prisoner swap. It was a substitution. Jesus was going to take Barabbas' place on that cross, but he's really taking ours, because we do deserve a penalty for our sin, but he continues to pay the debt. And so in these coming days, as we go with Jesus into the temple, into the upper room, to Gethsemane, to Calvary, let us keep our eyes fixed on him so that we might learn a lesson in mercy and forgiveness, because Jesus has taught us everything: how to live, how to love, how to behave, how to forgive, how to pray, and very soon he will teach us how to die. I would now like to invite the elect and candidates who are now in their final stages of preparation for the Easter sacraments to come forward for their last dismissal.